Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, engage today's top thinkers from around the world to bring you information, inspiration, and thought-provoking ideas you can put to use in your personal and professional life right now. Covering a broad range of topics, Close Up Radio digs deep to discover what makes today's top thinkers tick. Close Up Radio, where ideas matter. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks so much for joining us, everybody. It's 1 p.m. Eastern here at the Broadcast Center. I'm your host, Jim Masters. You're listening to Close Up Radio, which is a service of the award-winning Close Up Television and Radio, and we thank you all around the world for making us part of your day. It is Monday, May 24th, 2021, at the time of this broadcast, and we are very excited to welcome back GSM pioneer Dr. Marianne J. Legato. You know, recent polling of the youngest generation of Americans suggests that one in six actually identify as part of the LGBTQ community. Dr. Marianne Legato is the author of Plasticity of Sex, the Molecular Biology and Clinical Features of Genomic Sex, Gender Identity, and Sexual Behavior, which collects all the evidence-based research on issues of gender identity and transition to provide a comprehensive view on the development and variations of human sexuality. She says we are converting all of the scientific language into something more digestible for the lay public and help diffuse the hostility to these communities. She says the effort has been to make gender less of an emotional discussion and more scientifically based. Dr. Legato is a pioneer in the field, gender-specific medicine, the study of how normal human biology differs between men and women, especially in the diagnosis and treatment of disease. Now, as director for the Foundation for Gender-Specific Medicine, Dr. Legato's research has helped establish sex and gender as important variables in the way we think about the treatment of disease, as well as health and lifestyle. In the last decade, there have been incredible gains for same-sex couples, and now that the transgender community is demanding their respect as well. So Dr. Legato says she believes now the need to be more tolerant, there needs to be more tolerant in society to listen and not react with repugnance and repugnance, that is, or condemnation to these variations. The book is called The Plasticity of Sex, available on Amazon. Very honored to welcome Dr. Legato back live to Close Up Radio for this informative and insightful conversation, live and direct from New York City. Dr. Legato, thank you very much for joining us once again here on the program. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Well, it's a great pleasure to be here. Thank you for your interest in our work.
Oh, you are very, very welcome. It's an honor and a pleasure. You're publishing an edition of The Plasticity of Sex directed more towards the lay public. Tell us a bit about that and some of the differences that people will experience with that edition of the book.
Well, I undertook, as you have covered in previous interviews with me, Jim, the study of the differences between men and women as a result of work that was started in the 1990s about how women's experience of coronary disease was so dramatically different from that of men, and that our lack of knowledge about women and their unique physiology put them at risk for undertreatment, misdiagnosis, and unnecessary death. And with that work, we developed throughout the world a new science called gender-specific medicine, which was devoted to and continues to be the subject of research about the differences between men and women's normal physiology or function and their different experience of the same diseases. If you are interested in male versus female, especially in the present social and political climate, it becomes obvious that there are not just two black and white buckets into which a person falls, either completely male in every respect or completely female in every respect, and that indeed there are significant and not trivial differences in sexual anatomy, in a sense of what a comfort with the gender that one has been assigned at birth, and in sexual preference. So sexual function is more a continuum than it is a black-white male-female distinction. And I think that what this book attempts to do is to explain the emerging biology that underlies the differences that characterize so many members of the human family. Having done that work, it's obvious that we wrote this book for the scientific community that's very, very interested in the issue, but that the general public should have a simplified, if you will, or accessible version of the material that we've been able to assemble. So we are working on a second book for the lay public, and we hope that the scientific book, which just has been given a prize, actually, by the American Association of Publishers as the best biomedical publication in 2021.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We hope that the book will enjoy some interest and help defuse some of the, what I call, knee-jerk reaction and condemnation of the population that doesn't fit smoothly into male or female in all respects. In fact, I have come to believe that everyone has his or her position on the gender continuum, and that the information as it expands will help people decide where they fit in this very interesting series of differences in the molecular biology of sexual identity and function.
And one of the main things, too, is for people to not only understand and you know, appreciate what we're talking about here, but also the ability to even talk about it at all. Tell us a little bit more sort of about that gestation of the idea of how we can all learn to talk about the subject in a way that people not only understand it, but especially if maybe initially they are resistant to even discussing it.
Well, there is a lot of resistance, and there was in the scientific community as well. I tried to start this discussion 3 or 4 years ago. I remember distinctly being at an international congress on gender-specific medicine in Berlin and suggesting that we should begin to investigate, as we had the molecular biology of the difference between men and women, we should now begin to look at the variations on male and female and the origins of disorders of sex development, of gender dysphoria, and of variations in sexual preference, like homosexuality. And I met with a great deal of opposition that I hadn't expected. People said that that was not the subject of scientific discussion. Homosexuality, for example, my opposing colleague said, was a moral decision and had nothing to do with science, which I found rather surprising, because the community was otherwise very interested in gender-specific medicine. So that resistance has become a lot less, and I was very delighted that I was able, through my publisher Elsevier, to assemble a group of experts who could write on the subject. And one of the things the book did, and the research that I did and my colleagues did for the book, was how little we know about the molecular biology of how humans become who they are and how a person's whole physiology and susceptibility to disease and aging changes throughout the course of a lifetime. So the concept of gender fluidity is a kind of fascinating one, which I think has a real basis. We don't understand yet how that works from a biological point of view, but that, like so many other frontiers, are now open to in a much more accessible way than they were before the human genome was described in the year 2000 to 2003. So it's a time, I think, of expanding information and therefore of expanding hope that we can bring some level of tolerance, understanding, and specifically skilled health care for the population that doesn't fit smoothly into either male or female in all respects.
How would you say, Doctor, that the plasticity of sex actually marks a new direction for the foundation?
Well, it's an expansion of our work, definitely, and a very interesting expansion that I had obviously never envisioned when we began this work 30 years ago. But the progress in molecular biology and how genes are modified in terms of whether they're expressed or suppressed, and how the biological fact of being male or female impacts human function has become much better understood, and our information has expanded so much in the past decade that I think the foundation is indeed going in a different direction. And I shouldn't say different. I would say it's an expansion of our original ideas and concepts. If you think about it, Jim, in 1990, we never tested women to any extent except for their reproductive biology directly. We assumed they were too fragile, too delicate, to study. It would be expensive to study them because of the variation in their endocrine levels in the course of a month. And we decided that whatever we learned about men would be true of women, and we never tested that. That was a huge intellectual failure on the part of the scientific community. And we were amazed at the cornucopia of results that showed there were tremendously significant differences even in the way genes were expressed, the same genes as a function of a biological sex. So as that science expanded, this was a natural evolution, in my opinion, of where we should be going next, which are insights into what can go wrong and into specific needs for disease prevention, therapy, and ultimately better social and legal acceptance and equipment for this population.
So, you know, when we look at all of this, how would you say our understanding of the human genome influence, our understanding of sexuality and gender?
Well, we know that the brain is gender specific, and that there are differences in the male and female brain. And the second thing that we've learned is that the environment has a very important immediate impact in real time on function, on gene expression and function. And so the differences between biological sex and what's called gender, which is the human that results, if you will, from living in a specific environment and culture, become intricately intertwined. And there is no real difference now between sex and gender. It's a well-orchestrated, synthesized phenomenon which encompasses the molecular biology, but also the impact and translation of our environmental experience on how our genes are expressed and indeed how we become who we are as a function of our environment.
You know, it's really, this is very eye-opening in so many
ways. It's a whole new world.
Yeah.
And when
similar research,
I think even knowing that an environmental experience, learning a new skill, an experience for better or worse, can produce actually a change, a response at the level of molecular biology in the science that we now call epigenetics is a fascinating new development and explains so much of how people adjust to and in many ways profit from or resist the malignant effects of the societies in which they are raised. How we create memories, how we learn things, how we become who we are, basically, is an intimate fusion of our experience translated into gene expression through this modification of our biology that helps us respond to the challenges of the world in which we're placed.
So are they, in other countries, in different countries, in terms of the research, are they conducting similar research in other countries
Yes.
around the world?
Yes. The Karolinska Institute has always been in the forefront. The whole concept of taking care of the transgender population has been vastly expanded in terms of multidisciplinary clinics, the legal attention to the rights of the population that doesn't conform smoothly to male or female, the social position of that population, I think, is slowly beginning to improve. And people have become much more vocal and willing to state the fact that they do or do not fit into two, as I say, two distinct buckets of male or female. So the fact is there has been enormous growing public interest and vocalization about what was considered unspeakable before. And I hope that this will diffuse some of the tragic shunning, isolation, denigration, and even murder of a population which deserves to be studied with their collaboration with us, understood better, and receive not just better medical care, but much more fair legal and social access, or much better access to the legal and social privileges that most of us enjoy.
You know, in the last conversation, we talked a lot about this word variation, and I think it's, you know, it's a tremendous word. As we're looking at an entire population, obviously they're going to see all kinds of variation in all aspects of how a person really expresses their sense of self, and it's going to apply to gender, race, sexuality, and all of who we are, right?
You've said that very well. That's very well expressed. So I think, just sitting in my office in one day, the variation and the uniqueness between three or four patients that I see in the course of a morning is stunning to me, and the more I the more I'm exposed to the variety of what humans are, the more unique I find each person. People just don't come out of a cookie cutter, and to expect a certain level or kind of behavior is ridiculous. And so to listen with tolerance and empathy is an extremely important part of improving health care for all the members of the population.
Exactly right, yes. You know, people sometimes, as we're talking about, really struggle with talking about it all, but I think most people overall have empathy in their heart. Although if they still have the empathy, that doesn't mean they don't have difficulty understanding it because of the frame of reference,
That's
cultural
right, yes.
landscape, upbringing. There's lots of words that are hot buttons. Tell us a little
right.
about some of that, some of the cultural differences, the upbringing, religious views. There's all these other aspects that come into play that can sort of sometimes control and or rule what we say and do and what we don't say and do.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm trying to expunge some of the silence that has traditionally surrounded these issues. And if we can uncover and give voice to the population that doesn't fit smoothly into our preconceived notion of men and women, it would be very helpful. And, you know, science is a fabulous way to spend your life's work, I have to say. And finding that at the level of the single molecule of our DNA, of the way our genes are modified, is not only a function of biological sex, but from the time we're conceived to the very environment in which we exist, and that there so many things can differ in that environment, that we begin to understand much better the variations in human identity and function.
You know, I would imagine it might be difficult for people to understand, but they can still have, as we're saying, curiosity and empathy for individuals. There's, I guess, some difficulty too, maybe, or it could be very difficult, because these are always issues of identity as well, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
One thing I hope we can achieve as a community in the next decade or so is people who are not smoothly fitting into the famous dyadic buckets that I refer to so often don't feel so threatened that they can speak out. And as my colleague said to me the other day, until we find a language and words, we can't identify in ourselves variations of which for which there was no voice until now. So I thought that was a pretty intelligent comment. Provoking.
Absolutely.
Provoking.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we want to develop a language and a vocabulary based on science that will help the general understanding of the variability in the human population and tolerance for them, so that they're not frankly murdered. Their average life expectancy of a transgender is about 35 years of age, and all too often terrible consequences which are never brought to light because this population traditionally has had very little ability to express things without being very fearful. Hopefully we can help diffuse some of that and make life easier based on a better understanding of what the basic science of this definition of whether you're male or female and what variations are possible as we get more mastery of this subject.
Would you say that some of that ignorance and the difficulties sharing the conversations is a result of there just not being enough science yet, and that we need more?
Yes, yes. I think, you know, the great – I remember when the human genome was defined or announced from Clinton's office with the authorities, the head of the NIH and Craig Venter, two great scientists, talked about the fact that we had decoded the human genome and that was perfected over the course of a three-year period. I remember that it was reported in the New York Times on the front page, but below the fold. And yeah. I said, this may be the greatest thing that has happened to the human race, our ability to understand our own chemistry at the level of the molecule and how we become who we are. This may be the greatest human advance, including setting off rockets on Mars, that we have ever achieved. And I remember telling my children this at breakfast, and they're finding this a very amusing idiosyncrasy of mine that I would be so fascinated by this. But I remember subsequently talking to a Columbia reporter who wanted to know something about what I was doing. I said the real discovery today is this definition of the human genome. It's a window into exploration of what makes a human human that we've ever achieved. It was a very exciting moment. I'm not sure it was fully appreciated at the time. But we certainly have had an exponential expansion of information about our history, if you will, over the past 21 years, which has been a great adventure for all of us who are involved in it.
Yeah, I don't doubt. Absolutely. It's really incredible when you think about all of the work that you've put into all of this. You know, very interesting. A lot of people might not realize there's about 35 genders you can choose from on Facebook. Now, for the layperson who is way behind in understanding that, it can compound the problem, I guess, because there's so much to learn.
And how do we understand that? How do we understand that? What does that mean, there are 35 possibilities to select? And that's where we need a new language. As my young colleague had remarked, we need to let those 35 variants, if you will, speak, express, put words to their experience, and then try to correlate it with the expanding expertise that we have on how genes work and how they are modified in real time. We don't stay, obviously, stationary from the moment that we're born. We continue to develop every second that we're alive in response to the world in which we live, but also modified by our own basic genetic equipment and how that is modified as we grow and live through our lifespan. So it's a great journey, although I hate that word. It's so overused, but it is a journey. And it's exciting to see it expanding into this particular development where people feel encouraged to come forward and say, wait a second, your idea of human sexuality was oversimplified, and it's time we expanded the collective view of what it means and how it's modified and what the variants are. And I know we don't have an infinite amount of time, but my own insight into how important this field was happened about 10 years ago. I gave a talk at Johns Hopkins, and a woman walked up to me. She said, "Dr. Legato, I have a 5-year-old little girl who is absolutely convinced that she's a boy, and I have great empathy for her, and I want to help her. Can you explain why she feels this way and what I can do about it?" And I said, "I haven't got a clue." I said to myself, "I don't have a clue about how to begin to answer that question." And I never forgot that woman, her expression of love for the child, of tremendous anxiety about how she could be helpful. And I hope that we have answers for people like that as the science progresses that detoxify, if you will, people's anxiety and fear and the repercussions for having any variation in the, quote, normal that they may experience.
I'd say it's really a fascinating conversation, and there's so much more that we could explore and expand upon. Hopefully we'll chat some more down the line. I think we're just scratching the surface of all of this. I do want to make mention of the website, www.gendermed, that's M-E-D, the word gender, and then M-E-D, med.org, gendermed.org, and also the book, Plasticity of Sex, that is available on Amazon. This is, again, a fascinating conversation, Doctor, and I appreciate your taking time out of your always busy day to join us here.
I'm so glad that you're interested enough to have me as your guest, and I thank you. I find your questions relevant and your expression of the issues just as good as any I've heard. So thank you for your attention and your interest in this topic.
Oh, the honor and pleasure is all mine and ours here at Close Up Radio. You enjoy the rest of your day, Doctor, and thank you so much for being with us, and I'm hoping we chat again soon. Jim Masters here at Close Up Radio, thank you for joining us as well. And stay tuned. We'll be back with more great episodes in just a moment right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, have a terrific day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.